You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cleese Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Action Comics Special number 1, Batman number 46, Deathstroke number 31, DC Nation number 0, Supergirl season 3 episode 16 of Two Minds, Flash season 4 episode 20, Therefore She Is, and Arrow season 6 episode 21, docket number 11-19-41-73. Who came up with that name? But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, first up for DC news, yesterday was Free Comic Books Day. Did you go get your free comics, Cletus?
I did not. I had work for most of the day, and I will admit that I remembered it was Free Comic Book Day, but not in time to actually be able to go ahead of work. So that was kind of a disappointment, but... it's always a great day. Even though I wasn't able to participate, I'm thrilled that it exists, and always encourage people to go check it out.
Yeah, I knew it was Free Comic Book Day too, but alas, I was not able to make it either. Too much going on. So, since Cletus and I were both slackers, we can't tell you what DC had for free comics this week. So, we're hopefully you guys made it out. I know a lot of... There was quite a few people from the ESO Network participating in different free comic book day events. So, I know I saw Mike Gordon was somewhere, and Bobby Nash was somewhere, and other people were somewhere. I also know a lot of people from the network were also at Hoodlanta, which was going on. It was a big weekend this weekend with stuff going on. So... But hopefully you guys made it out to Free Comic Book Day and enjoyed the events of it. All right, in other DC news, Swamp Thing is getting a live-action show on the DC Digital Streaming Service, the new DC Universe service. So it looks like the series is scheduled to debut in 2019. And... So far, this is the fifth original series announced for the DC Universe digital service.
I'm kind of curious to see what they do with this.
I am too.
I'm also, the thing I'm very curious with is the kind of budget that these are going to have. Because you know that they're going to want to put some money into it, but also they don't know what the audience is that they're going to have yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Netflix knows that they can afford to put, you know, a certain amount in because they know that they're already getting the money. DC doesn't know for sure. I mean, they will, obviously, but how much? So I'm very curious.
They got to start somewhere, though, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it does well. So right now, for right now, with the DC Universe Digital Service... has that we know of is they're having their live action Titans, they're having their animated Young Justice Outsiders, their animated Harley Quinn, the live action Metropolis, and now the live action Swamp Thing. DC has quite a bit of stuff they can bring to this digital service already that, you know, has been out for a while too.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's going to be one of the easier things that they'll have to be able to launch this is the fact that they have a pretty healthy backlog that they can add on to it.
I know. I'm not sure about all the rights for stuff like Batman, the animated series, and Justice League series and stuff like that, but...
Right.
But I would not be surprised at all to see that kind of stuff on here.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I know because they're reviving Young Justice, which is really... That's probably the one I'm the most excited for out of their various projects. The one I'm kind of crossing my fingers is that maybe they'll revive the Green Lantern animated series.
Oh, that would be awesome.
It was really good, and it was canceled in large part, at least in my opinion, due to the extreme incompetence of
Cartoon Network.
Cartoon Network. So who
Yeah.
knows? I mean, it's probably too far down the road to redo, but man, if they did, that would be so nice.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Even if they had, that'd be awesome to have the them to have the old series, the old series on here, the seasons they have completed. But we don't know about the rights of those either.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but yeah, we'll definitely keep our eye on DC Universe, and I'm hoping they announce a launch date for it sometime soon. 'Cause I haven't heard
That's.
anything.
I don't think they have either. Which is so. Yeah, they're pushing out a lot of news, which makes sense because you want to get people excited for it. It's got to be this year, but when this year is the question.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, Paul Blackthorne, who plays Quentin Lance on Arrow, is leaving at the end of season 6. Apparently, his contract's up and he's not renewing it.
Well, I mean, I do think it's felt like this season, like they've been kind of pushing towards a possible out for his character. Like I could very easily see it being him and Black Siren sort of going off somewhere and basically trying to restart their life somewhere else. And I don't know. I feel like his character's done almost all his character can do, right? Like he's seen such character growth from what we when he first was basically a almost an antagonist in the first season,
Oh, he was definitely an antagonist.
and he's now essentially like in a lot of ways he's sort of Oliver's second father.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen a lot of growth with his character.
So I mean, and I feel like it's a good time. I'm sure the actor is looking forward to doing some other things. What was interesting, the article that I read about this, Mark Guggenheim was also talking about Thea, the actress that plays Thea, was leaving the show as too, which we know, of course, she's already done. And said that she had requested that they downplay her commitment to the show in the previous couple seasons with the intent of being, let go this season at the end of her contract. And I thought that explained a little bit some of the lack of material that her character was given. Although I still think that they could have done more than what they did. It almost felt like they were like, well, we can't have her on the show, so we'll just give her no story. And to me, that almost feels like that compounds the problem. Like, as an actress, I'm sure she wanted to do something more interesting. I don't blame her. And when you know, she's like, okay, well, I want to do other things. And then when you are there, the little time that you are there, you're doing such boring, you're really doing almost nothing. It almost guarantees that she's going to want to leave the show.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the roundtable in one catchphrasy kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant geekery? Redonkulous? let's not go with Shrek. The
Okay.
first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of,
Guys, promo. Stay on
Promo.
topic here.
Yeah.
Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic. Stay on topic.
Topic.
Red leader, I'm
no, I'm sorry.
Stay
I
on
can't
topic.
Speak. I can't speak. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo,
So,
Luke?
promo! The Roundtable. Brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
Alright, let's talk Action Comics Special number 1. In this issue, we have a Lex that comes from the future and breaks into the Fortress of Solitude. And he ends up firing a missile at a LexCorp plane that has Lois Lane on the flight. I gotta ask you, Cletus, didn't this Lex feel more like a pre-52 Lex than a future version of the Rebirth Lex?
He did, and it was this whole issue, not just this story, but this whole issue, I found personally to be really unsatisfying. Not that I'm surprised that they're trying to bring Lex back into being a villain, but like, it's with almost no fanfare. It's almost like this issue almost felt like it was just like, oh yeah, he's a villain again. Which is so lame. That's the most boring way to do it. You had this whole storyline of him trying to be a hero, trying to be Superman, and then this one you have a future version of him being a villain, but in the same story, the current version of him has that weird one line where he's like, oh, by the way, did you notice I'm not wearing your logo anymore? One of my greatest mistakes. And I was like, what?
Yeah, okay, because I wanted to talk about that with you. The present-day Lex did not feel like the present-day Rebirth Lex we've been reading about this whole time. He was so Superman negative. I know they butted heads a little bit, but they've always been kind of uneasy partners, you know what I mean? And this felt like a total turn from that.
I don't really know what to say because I was so disappointed when I was reading this issue. This story and the following story, I was just like, what are we doing? Like, I'm okay with him becoming a villain again, but like, provided it's accompanied by a good story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, give us the story where that happens. I'm thinking maybe it does happen in Doomsday Clock is my guess. If I had to guess, I would say that maybe the heel turn comes there, but we haven't seen that yet. And so it's like, well, if you're going to do that, you can't just then wait. You know what I mean? Just like wait the couple months, or I know it's going to be probably a year, but wait like that extra 6 or 7 months for Doomsday Clock to have the heel turn come out for Lex, and then start telling the villainous stories again, because this is just super unsatisfying. It's just sort of like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm a bad guy again. And to me, at least, as I was reading this story in particular, but also the following one, really showed how shallow that version of the character is. Like, not obviously as a person, but also just like as a character. There's not a lot of depth when you just play him straight villainous like that. He's kind of lame.
Yeah, Lex Luthor's always good when he's a more layered character, where he has these grand plans where he's subtle about his evilness.
It's not even just the lack of a grand plan. It was more just like, it's just hatred for the sake of hatred. You know what I mean? Like, Lex is very interesting, like you said, when there are layers going on. It's not that he can't be interesting as a villain. He absolutely can be. Forever Evil, yes, he's the protagonist of the story, but he's absolutely a bad guy during that story. Like, he is not a good person. But that story has depth to that character. There's still interesting things that you can do with that. Yeah, I don't know. That was my big takeaway from this. There was some the last story in this was pretty good, but my whole takeaway from this whole thing was just like,
At the end of the issue, we saw Superman keep the truth from Lex about his future self. Do you think he should have told him who that really was? Do you think it would have made Lex maybe reconsider where he might be going with his thoughts? Or maybe you don't think so because they played him so evil in this.
This is the thing that I thought was weird. I thought it would make sense for him to tell Lex the current Lex that we had been seeing, because those two have kind of formed a rapport a little bit. It makes sense though, because the Superman we saw in this story has zero regard for Lex. Like, he is instantly like, of course it's you. You're always a bad guy. You know what I mean? Like, he was back to that sort of thing we saw at the beginning of Rebirth.
See, that just kind of throws out everything that's been going on in Rebirth. I mean, the whole rapport they've built over time. I mean, they basically came to respect each other.
I agree. Like I said, it felt like they just were throwing out the entire Lex Luthor story. And I just don't, like I said, I get moving on from that, but just without any sort of story to go along with it is very unsatisfying.
Now, in that second story, did you get the indication that they were hinting at doing the President Luther story?
Yeah, but why? We've seen it.
I know.
I mean, I guess it could be interesting, but like that version of Lex was not an interesting version. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was that same sort of shallow, hollow character that, yes, he can be. Like Lex can be that, but that's not the best version of him.
Right. Now, none of these stories were written by Bendis, so.
But I still feel like in some level, they have to be setting up something Bendis wants to be telling.
See, and that's what I was wondering if it was or wasn't.
I could be wrong. I feel like it has to be, because otherwise, why would Juergens just randomly write Lex turning evil again if that wasn't part of Bendis's plans?
That's true, because he's the one that's been writing Action Comics, so, and he's been portraying Luther the other way.
Yeah. I mean, I can buy Juergens not wanting to write Luther as a good guy because, I mean, Juergens has written Superman for so long. But I can't imagine that they would put this story out with two different villainous Lex stories if that wasn't part of Bendis' overall plan. And to be frank, it doesn't surprise me. This is one of the things I talked about when Bendis first signed on, was that he tends to kind of want to tell his story, which is fine. Like, of course, any writer does. But he kind of disregards what everybody else has kind of been doing up to that point. Fair or not, that's his MO. That is what Bendis kind of does, and this, to me, just falls right in pattern with that.
The last story in this, I thought it was pretty good. The one called The Driver's Seat, where Lois is in an accident with a car that's kind of special to her, and the cool ending that we had that Clark did.
Yeah, it was really good. It also, I mean, it had a Manipul drawing, which instantly made it even better. Because his artwork is just so top-notch.
Now, the one thing I thought was weird was it was a Christmas story, so I didn't really think it fit with this issue. I was like, why aren't they doing this at Christmas time?
Yeah, that was a little weird. I almost felt like maybe I almost wonder if these were some stories they had backlogged to a certain extent and decided to just put them all out together.
Yeah,
The last ones I felt like was one that was a story that was written and they were kind of sitting on it to put it out in something.
That could very well be.
Yeah. So I don't know. This whole comic was kind of odd, I thought.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that.
Because it didn't really set up anything other than maybe the president one, but then you could also interpret it that being like the origin to when he did run for president. That was a thing that was unclear to me. Was this just a reference to, because remember, Rebirth is sort of trying to reincorporate the old DC universe into it, and so is that almost like an origin story for when he ran for president?
Yeah, I guess that's a good
point. It could go either way. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it definitely could be just another, they're going to tell another Luther for president story. I have no idea.
I have no idea either. Because, well, I'll just have to wait and see. All right, well, let's move on to our next title, Batman number 46. All right, so last issue, Booster Gold saves Bruce Wayne's parents from being murdered as a wedding present. And when it's time for Booster Gold to fix the timeline, Bruce ends up destroying Skeets, and this kind of strands Booster in the alternate timeline. So when issue 46 begins, it's 1 year later. We see Booster Gold has a new plan, and that's to break Selina Kyle out of Arkham Asylum and try to get her and Bruce together. Because, you know,
a meet cute.
Because, you know, love conquers all. But not with Tom King. We see everything go to hell.
So funny, this whole story. He's just been like, it's been quintessential Booster to me, where like he is trying to do the right thing, because like Booster does want to do the right thing. He does want to be a good person, but like he just can't quite do it. He just isn't quite competent enough to get it done.
Oh man, did this go so wrong?
Oh, it went so bad.
So Booster brings Selina to Bruce, and basically the first thing she does is attack Alfred. And then we have the evil Dick Grayson Batman shows up, and he just starts shooting people. And by the time we get to the last panel, Bruce is the only one left standing. And we even see Booster get shot.
I think Booster just got knocked out.
Oh, that's good, because it looked like...
Selina, I think the implication is that Selina and Dick are, and the dad and Alfred are all actually dead, was my interpretation, that Booster was just knocked out.
Okay. See, I thought Booster got shot, but he wasn't dead, because we do see him talk after what I thought I remembered him getting shot.
Yes, he does, because he's like, I saved the day, right?
Yeah, not quite. So
I think my interpretation was that everybody else involved died, except for Bruce and Booster.
So I'm wondering what kind of effect it's going to have on Bruce, that this event happening. Is it going to trigger some sort of dormant memory of the alternate timeline or something?
Well, you can tell he remembers on some level. Remember, in the first issue of this storyline, he admits that he knows, but he doesn't want it to change because he wants his dad and mom to stay around. And then we even see it in this issue. He's praying because he's worried that his dad is going to pass away, and that's all he does. Like, he's just like, just give this to me. Like, let me keep this.
Yeah, well, guess what?
Yeah.
That's not happening.
Right. But so I think I wouldn't say it's less about him remembering and more of him choosing to accept, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. So, really good storyline. I'm looking forward to, I don't know, does it wrap up next issue? Or?
I would think so. Honestly, I was very surprised that this was more than a two-parter. I thought it was just going to be a two-parter.
So I know
I'm already playing with house money right now, man. This is great.
We're getting close, because Batman 50 is the big wedding issue, and this is 46, so it's coming soon.
If this ended up taking us all the way to 49, oh man, I'd be thrilled. I'd be very surprised, but I'd be thrilled.
Yeah, I don't think it is. My gut tells me it's going to wrap up next issue.
I think you're right. I will say one thing. I had one complaint about this issue, and I was the both the cover and the one page full page spread they had of Selina was a little too TNA for me. It's just like, it was so unnecessary, especially the spread was just so unnecessary for the story, and it just listeners of the show will know what I would like, my taste for certain things, and that was definitely not it. But everything else was fantastic. But that one thing, I was like, ah, oh, come on, guys. Like, do we need to do this? To me, it distracted me from what otherwise was a very fantastic comic. Felt like we took a couple steps back into the 90s.
That's what I was thinking, too. All right, let's move on to our next title, Deathstroke number 31. All right, well, as usual, Priest writes a story that's hard to follow. I actually had to read this issue twice to make sure I got all the facts straight.
It's because he was jumping all over the place. It was hard. He's making it hard to follow in a way that's not necessary. You know what I mean? Like, you can tell a story like the War of Jokes and Riddles was hard to follow because you couldn't necessarily predict what was going to happen. But it was easy to understand the action. With this one, like, it's just hard to understand what's even going on.
Yeah, and I ended up reading it twice just to make sure I had things right. I'm not even for sure. So let's talk about the first thing I want to talk about. First, I had a problem figuring out who shot down Deathstroke's plane. Was it Batman? Was it Talia al Ghul? After reading this issue twice, I'm still not sure. Because you have a scene between Alfred and Wintergreen kind of talking about it, but then I was like, but why would Bruce have a fake Batman show up? And then Talia shows up, and I'm wondering, okay, was she behind it? What's your thoughts on it?
I think it's Talia. Initially, I thought it was Bruce, but then it didn't really make sense story-wise, so I think it's gotta be Talia, because Talia is going after the sword. So I think it is Talia.
Okay. So do you think her goal is the sword then?
No. No, I think she was using that to draw Slade to her.
Oh, okay.
Because she knew that he would go after it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's come back to that in a few minutes. We'll talk about that when we get towards the end of the issue. Next thing I was wondering about, what was up with that Robin black and white video. I'm assuming it's a Dick Grayson Robin, because it doesn't even tell us. It's either Dick Grayson or Jason Todd. I wasn't sure. They're talking about how Batman's not doesn't want to hug or doesn't feel like a fan. I don't know. It's just his characterization of Bruce just fell off. What'd you think of his little video?
Yeah, I would agree with that. But it also felt in line, like it looked like you were trying to have both sons, essentially, or I guess he was the adoptive son, but it felt like essentially you had both sons sort of describing their dads in non-flattering light. But I would agree with that. It felt a little harsh.
Now, the other question I had about this video is, who was watching it? Why was this video made? It didn't make any sense. Why was it even in there?
Clearly this whole storyline is about fatherhood in some level, and so it felt like it was sort of these people kind of I can't think of his name, but Slade's son, and then you had Robin kind of describing what it's like living with their dads.
Oh yeah, that's right, because we had
this whole thing comes down to Damian, who is Damian's father,
right?
And so I think this whole thing, like that whole theme of like dealing with dads, is sort of running through. I think that's the point of why it's there.
Okay.
I was surprised it didn't run through more.
All right. One other thing we find out in the story is Bruce finds out from Jim Gordon that a Wayne Tech chip has been stolen. And I think it was a phone, if I remember right. And we find out that the government is behind this. Batman ends up coming across Slade's ex, Adeline Kane. Do you think she was the mastermind behind getting that Wayne Tech chip? See, I was trying to figure out why this was in the story at all.
I think it felt like he was getting to her to, in some way, get to Slade. I think also maybe he was trying to make sure that she wasn't the mastermind behind this whole thing. Like, we can see here that Talia is clearly up to something.
Yeah.
But it seems like Bruce hadn't quite figured that out yet.
Okay.
That was my interpretation, at least, was that he was going there and both in a way to figure out what Slade was doing exactly, and also to figure out who exactly is trying to move the pawns.
Okay. Yeah. I see that now. I did find it funny that when Batman gave his big long analysis to Adeline of how he tracked her down, she called bull crap on him. She's like, I missed a surveillance video, didn't I? I thought that was pretty funny. All right, well, let's get to the end of this issue where we have Talia state that she needs to talk to Slade about his son. The thing I thought was interesting is she didn't say which son. She didn't really name Damian or what son she was talking about. So I had this feeling that this was a kind of like a writer's trick, where he's trying to make the readers think that she's talking about Damian, but she might be talking about one of other Slade's sons that she has some important information to tell him about.
That's what I'm hoping, because my big thing with this whole storyline is I'm almost like watching it with like one eye covered, like sort of like kind of not wanting to look, because I don't want Damian to suddenly be Deathstroke's son. Don't think that they would do that, but it's in play. The fact that it's even in play in this story makes me so nervous.
Yeah, I mean, that would change Damian's whole dynamic, and
what it would do is it would eventually cause Damian to stop being Robin. Like, they would phase him out. Let's be real. Like, if he was no longer Batman's son at some point, they would introduce a different Robin, and he would just be phased out.
Yeah, you're right. That's what would happen.
And I like it. I just like him as a character.
First off, I like that Batman has a son. Secondly, but it's also nice because he's essentially irreplaceable as Robin. Like, you can finally just have, like, Dick Grayson was Robin for so long, and then there was a lot of different replacements all, you know, in the 80s and 90s there was a bunch grouped together. Damian sort of provides that stability of, like, he's Robin because yeah. he's his son and he's young. Like, he's best as a young character, and naturally he should be Robin. And so it's nice, so you don't have to keep coming up with different Robins or, like, writing some in and writing other ones out. Like, that's another reason I like his character. It provides stability in that role.
Right. And he's young, and he's got a lot of growth potential.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, he's a great character to go with Superman's son, John. I mean, we've seen it in the Super Sons title. Their dynamic together is great.
Yeah, I agree. So, like I said, I really don't want him to... I don't think, but the fact that it's even in play makes me nervous.
I know. It makes me nervous, too, because I do not want that status quo to change. After getting to the end of this story, my gut was telling me Priest was just trying to do this fake out. But I guess we'll wait. We'll have to see. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week. DC Nation number 0. I gotta tell you, Cletus, the Joker story was awesome.
It was very good. I mean, are we surprised, though?
Not really. I mean,
Tom King's already shown that he can write a killer Joker story, and this one was very good. I totally agree with you. I mean, it was like, wow, this... I was surprised that they put this in DC Nation and not as a separate Batman issue. It was so good.
It was. And the great thing about it, the story is, it's just the Joker waiting with some random stranger, because the Joker is waiting for this invitation to come from Batman. And this dude's like wondering why Joker's there, thinking he's going to get an invitation to Batman's wedding. And it's just great because you know the whole time this dude is going to die.
Right, and he knows it too. And that's the that's like the worst part, because it's just like you can feel his pain, because he's just like, I know how this is going to end. Just do it already. Oh, it's awful. King writes the Joker so well in that he both at the same time downplays his menace and then also just increases it exponentially in a different way. You know what I mean? Like, he's not outlandishly villainous in the moment necessarily. Like, he's just sitting there telling jokes, but the mental torture that that's inflicting on that guy is so much worse than any, like, outright malicious thing that he could do.
Tom King writes the victim very well. I mean, you see how nervous he is. At one point, he's even begging the Joker just to kill him now. And it leaves a real mystery to the reader, too. The reader's wondering why this guy's getting a letter from Batman's wedding. So we're wondering, why is this guy getting an invitation to Batman's wedding? You know, how did the Joker even find out about it?
And you know he's not actually, and that's the thing, the guy argues it so well. He's like, you're not going to get a letter from Batman here. Like, he's not going to send you a letter to you at my place.
And then when the mail actually comes, the Joker gets so excited. And then you see him opening this letter and he's jumping up and down. And then, of course, he ends up shooting the stranger. And I love the last panel where we actually get to see the letter he read. It's from the guy's, his daughter's school. And it's basically a letter saying, hey, she's missed school this day. You know, she's probably playing hooky.
I mean, that's one of those things. It's one of those ways that, like I said, that King just shows the menace and insanity of the Joker in such a subtle way. Because he sees that letter, sees exactly what he wants to see, and goes on his way. And then, like you said, you read the letter, and it's nothing of the sort. And I feel like it's such an easy, subtle way to show how insane the Joker is without writing the phrase, the Joker is insane.
Yeah. Instead of telling us, he shows us. And he does it very well. Now, at the end of the story, we see where the story's supposed to continue in Batman number 48. So I'm excited to see more of the Joker and what Tom King's plan is for him for Batman's wedding. The question I have the most is, how did the Joker find out about Batman getting married? That's what I'm intrigued to find out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Does he actually know?
You would think, I don't know. You would think it would get out because Catwoman has connections to the underworld, right? And I feel like it's gotten around that she's getting married.
But the thing is, once she gets married to Bruce Wayne, isn't that going to be a big red flag for his secret identity?
I mean, there are so many other red flags, though.
Point taken. All right, well, we get to the second story in DC Nation number 0, and this is a Superman story by Brian Michael Bendis. In this story, Lois has left her job at the Daily Planet to write a novel, is what we see. And we see this new reporter, Miss Robinson Good, has been brought on staff. And she seems to be really interested in Clark Kent. What did you think of this story?
It was super boring. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I was like, oh, this is kind of lame. And also, it felt like he was, you know how you can tell a story and you're teasing too much, and without ever actually telling enough of the story. That's what I felt this was like. It felt like he kept trying to like tease different potential stories. Like, Lois is somewhere and she's missing, and then this gal comes in. I was like, okay, but what was the story here? Exactly. Like, why am I reading this specific story?
Did it feel like that maybe Lois and Clark are having some sort of marital problem?
I don't think so. That was not my interpretation.
Okay, do you think Clark knew where Lois was?
Yeah, I thought so, yes.
See, I wasn't sure because I couldn't tell by the way Bendis wrote this.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. Like I said, I felt like there wasn't enough going on, and it was just, I don't know.
The reason why I was wondering is, I mean, we have Perry talking to Clark alone about his article being poorly written, like he was worrying about Lois and not paying attention what he was, or you know what I mean, not spending the quality on his writing that he should have. I don't know. I got the feeling that there was some sort of problem between the two.
You could be right, man. That's the thing. I have no idea.
So I'm not really sure what he's trying to do. I'm not really. If this is his intent, I'm not looking forward to that story very much. I like the family dynamic of the Kents. I like Tomasi's version. So I'm not so sure about this. And there's no even mention of John at all.
Like I said, there was so little in this story. I was just like, you could have just not included this, and I would have the same amount of information going into his Man of Steel story.
All right. Well, like Cletus said, this is supposed to be continued in the Man of Steel number 1, which is out.
But what continue what? That's my...
Hey, I'm just telling you what it said. It says the story continues in Man of Steel 1, and it's supposed to be out May 30th. All right, let's move on. I don't know if you noticed, but as the more we read into DC Nation number 0, the worse it got. Because then we get into the justice, no justice look, and I'm just not interested in the story at all.
That one at least was setting things up. I will admit, like, it itself wasn't super interesting, but at least was trying to set the Justice League up, right?
Yeah.
So I will at least give it credit. Like, I ended that and I was like, okay, I have a better idea of what you're trying to do with the Justice League title. Whereas I left the Superman one going, I have zero indication of where you're trying to go with this story.
All right. Well, let's talk about this prelude to the Justice No Justice. So we have different superhero villain teams that are teaming up to deal with this new threat from behind the source wall. These beings that are coming. And apparently they're coming for Brainiac's homeworld. The teams that they put together, we have Team Entropy, which has Batman, Deathstroke, Lobo, Lex Luthor, and Beast Boy. We have Team...
And so I want to mention just real quick, they described Lex Luthor as evil super genius. And I was like, okay, I mean, yes, he is generally evil. But again, it was that sort of like, oh, did we just decide that he's bad again? But he's on the Justice League. So that was the thing. I was just like, can we make up our mind? What are we doing with Lex exactly here?
Apparently, they're making him evil. All right, the next team we have is Team Mystery, and this one's led by Superman. So you have Superman, Starfire, Martian Manhunter, Sinestro, and Starro.
I did not remember that Sinestro was supposed to be on the team.
Yeah, I remember him being on one of the teams.
Huh.
I remember talking about
that
it.
That was a pleasant surprise for me. I was like, oh, really? Okay. So that was kind of cool. And also, the fact that Starro is on there, I think, is a little silly, but also, I kind of want to see that.
I thought it was very silly, but we'll see what happens. Even though I'm not that interested in the story, you know we're going to be covering it because it's a big DC event. And we're a DC podcast.
Yep.
All right. Anyways, next we have a team Wonder, which is led by Wonder Woman. So we have Wonder Woman, Raven, Dr. Fate, Etrigan, and Zatanna. And for
I still think it's weird that Constantine's not on that team. That I will say, when I was reading this, I thought Team Wonder seemed a little small compared to the rest. Was that just me?
No, I know it's not, because when I wrote it down, every team has 5 members on it.
Okay, that's weird. I guess when I just looked, I was like, oh, it feels like there's less members on here, but clearly I was wrong.
And then finally, we have the last team, which is Team Wisdom, which is led by Cyborg. So you have Cyborg, Robin, Adam, Flash, Harley Quinn. Now, I was wondering, why does this team have Robin on it? And then I was like, why does this team have Harley Quinn on it? I know why Harley Quinn's there, because he's a popular character, so they just threw her on a team.
They even basically admitted as much, where they're like, you know who she is.
Yeah.
Of all the people, like, they didn't even do that for Superman. It's like Superman, the Kryptonian hero or something like that.
Yeah.
And then Harley Quinn, you know who she is. Yes, that's the one. Clearly the most famous character of all of them.
So, anyways, personally, I think this is kind of a silly story, but we'll go. I'm sure there's people out there excited for it.
I am intrigued by some of the teams. I will admit, though, there was way too much going on in this for me to care what was, because it was clearly just trying to set stuff up to the point where I was like, okay, I mean, this is nice, but like, show me, I'm ready for, like, I want to read like the actual stories.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't really need to get this teased, I don't think. Maybe they're trying to draw in a bigger audience, I don't know, but
I would have preferred them to do similar to what King did, which is a story that definitely, like, sets up, like, it teases that big wedding issue, but it's just its own story, right?
Yeah.
And Snyder, at least, is very capable, and Bendis is capable, too, of telling that kind of story. So, like, it's not that these guys can't do that. Like, they have told stories that are just as good as stories that King writes, so.
Now, I have to say, we've been, on the podcast, not that excited about Brian Michael Bendis writing Superman. I loved his Ultimate Spider-Man run. So, it's not like I'm not a Bendis fan. I just haven't seen anything with Superman that I've been interested in that he's been writing so far.
I am, yeah, and I will admit, I've been pretty harsh about, like you said, like, what the prospect of him writing Superman. He's done some really good stuff, but he's also done some stuff that I really haven't liked, too. And so, he has earned the big name that he has made in the industry. Don't get me wrong. Like, he is a big writer, but he's done enough for me personally, stories that I didn't enjoy, that make me nervous about what I'm going to get.
One of the last things I want to talk about before we move away from this issue. So at the end of the issue, we find that the Justice League teams are trying to protect the wrong planet. The threats beyond the source wall end up targeting Earth first, as we see when Supergirl flies out into the atmosphere. After she was done talking to Green Arrow. So it looks like those creatures are coming to Earth. So all these teams may be at the wrong place. So I was kind of curious about what was going to go on with that.
Yeah, me too. I am I'm kind of intrigued. And like, some of the teams, especially Superman's team, is really intriguing, with both Sinestro and Starro on the team. But yeah, I do think there's potential for the story to be kind of overcrowded as well.
Yeah. Something we've seen lately with Snyder.
Yes, yeah.
All right. Well, the Justice League No Justice number one is going to be out next week. So we'll be talking about it next week. All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
Do you like movies? Do you like TV?
Do you like discussing the temporal effects of non-linear time travel and its implication on the plot of the movie Looper?
Okay. Do you enjoy the latest in pop culture news? Do you enjoy superheroes?
Do you enjoy discussing the relative merits of superpowers and their effects on human physiology?
Anyways, if you enjoy these things, even a small amount, you'll love the Rusted Robot Podcast.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, YouTube, and make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Subscribe so you never miss an episode.
TheRustedRobot.podbean.com.
And we're back! Let's talk Supergirl, Season 3, Episode 16, Of Two Minds. All right, well, one of the big things we saw in this episode, Cletus, was Karma and Irma being at odds with how to deal with Pestilence. Irma wants to kill her, while Kara wants to save her.
Yeah, and this is one of those ones where I actually really appreciated the sort of battle between the two, because both have really good points. Of course, Supergirl's whole thing, she doesn't kill. There's always a better way, just much like Superman. However, Irma raises a really good point in that the millions and millions and millions of people that have died kind of justified the death of this one villain. So I thought both had good points. It's always more interesting when both sides have good points, and I thought that was definitely the case here.
Yeah. We know Supergirl's way. She's going to try to find a better way. Yeah. But another point that Irma points out is that, you know, I've been to the future. Your way doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, both sides had – that was the thing. Like, her counter argument was not weak by any stretch.
So we also find out in this episode that both Wynn and Alex contract the disease that Pestilence is spreading. And one of the things I knew was – because we know those characters aren't going away, I knew they were going to get fixed by the end of the episode.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was surprised at how emotional the scene between Wynn and James was. Like, that was like an actual death scene emotion. I was like, wow, I know for sure you're not gonna die, but you guys are really going all in on this.
Yeah, they sure were, and I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, this is Wynn and Alex, two main characters. We're not gonna get rid of them.
Yeah, then they didn't pretend like it with Alex, but yeah, with Wynn, it was like, I know you're not killing him off, but I don't know. I will say that aside, because that's always that old argument of if there's no stakes, can you still have the emotional investment? I did think the scene still worked just because the actors sold it so well. Even though I didn't feel the stakes involved, it was still a nice scene.
Yeah. I have to agree with you on that. I mean, they did sell it well, but we knew Wynn wasn't going anywhere.
Right.
Another thing I found funny, speaking about Wynn, when Brainiac shows up as his human self, and Wynn knows exactly that, number one, it's Brainiac, and number two, what technology he's using. I thought that was pretty funny.
That was funny. I got a laugh out of that whole thing just because I was like, oh, they found another way to circumvent the budget.
Yeah, that too. It does take time, though, to put all that makeup and stuff on.
Oh, I know.
Too.
And I actually felt bad for the actor, because he had that on briefly, right? How long do you think he had to sit in makeup for what ultimately was like, what, 2 seconds?
Yeah.
Oh, that. I was surprised that he didn't pop up anywhere else in his true Brainiac form, just to, like, once he was in the makeup, they could film a couple different scenes with that, like, get their money's worth out of it.
Yeah. But now they have an excuse not to have him in his Brainiac makeup, so I don't know, maybe that'll help with speeding up some of the filming too.
Maybe, yeah.
All right. And in another part of the story, we see that Lena is working to isolate and eliminate the enzymes that turn Samantha into Rain.
They keep... So with this whole scene between... this whole thing with Lena, they keep... It feels like they keep kind of flirting with that villainous line. Like, she's doing things that could be perceived as villainous, even though she's clearly doing it to try and be a good friend that she cares for. But, like... not insisting on not telling people, keeping her locked up, and then sort of do it like they're all necessary. But it was, they keep kind of that her right on that line of villainy, I thought.
Yeah, but the other thing I think the why she was keeping it secret is I don't think she wanted anybody to learn that Samantha was a world killer.
Right. No, and I understood. Like I said, she's clearly on the positive side of that line, but they had her closer than I think I would have expected.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, because Lena is walking that fine line of, is she still a good person or is she a villain?
Right.
And I think the show is doing
clearly good, but yeah.
I think the show is doing it on purpose because they want us to think that she could be turning to a villain. And who knows? We've been wondering about that for the last two seasons, what their plans are for Lena.
And I kind of like it. I actually like that they kind of keeping us guessing and on our toes with her.
Yeah.
It makes it a little bit more fun than kind of telegraphing it one way or the other.
Right. This kind of parallels what they did in Smallville, but you knew Lex was going to turn to a villain at some point. We don't know what they're going to do with Lena.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they could leave her a good guy for the whole series, for all we know. But they're writing it well, so they've got us wondering, is she turning into a bad guy or is she staying a good person?
And the thing that I also really like, I'm glad that you brought that comparison up, is that Lex, you knew that he was going to be a villain, but he was also doing very antagonistic things leading up to his heel turn in Smallville. Whereas with Lena here, you know that it's going to be like something big is going to have to cause that shift, because she is not inherently a bad person.
Right.
So I think that makes it a little more nuanced and a little bit more kind of interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. With her brother and with her mother both being bad, we could easily see her turn bad. But I like the way the writers have been writing her. Because if they ever do that flip, they've got us caring about Lena, because she has been a good person, so.
Yeah.
All right, well, we get to the end of this episode, and we see that the other two world killers show up and rescue Samantha. Well, if you want to call it a rescue. What did you think of the idea of Samantha and Rain going to another dimension when the other one shows up?
I think it's kind of interesting. I think it's also the only way you can have some sort of direct conflict between the two, because otherwise you essentially force the actress to almost talk to herself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because at some point, you know, you have to show the struggle between the two, and you can only do that so many ways before it starts to look silly. And I thought this was a much better solution to that. Like, you know, there has to be some sort of confrontation between these two personalities inside her. And there's no way to make her talking to herself not look ridiculous at a certain point. So I thought this was a really clever solution to that.
Yeah, I liked it too.
It continues to be, I think, a pretty strong season overall. I did think they mentioned, remember we've been debating why not telling Mon-El about the mission didn't really make sense. I like that he mentioned that too, like, why didn't you guys tell me? I was like, yes, why didn't you tell him?
Yeah, it's always great when these shows address some of the audience's questions with the characters.
I didn't feel like they did not answer that satisfactorily for me.
Hey, they never guaranteed a satisfactory answer, but at least they're questioning it.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Flash Season 4, Episode 20, Therefore She Is. So, during this episode, we see flashbacks that we learn more about Marlies and DeVoe's relationship. And we find out that he believes the root of the world's problem is because man always uses new technology developments for evil. So DeVoe wants to rid humanity of its dependence on technology by rebooting their brains back to a primitive state. Now we see that Marlise is frightened by this and runs the hell away, basically. But unfortunately, later on, we see that she ends up siding with him after, you know, she's doing this humanitarian project in Kenya and is attacked and equipment's hijacked by local terrorists.
I really liked the flashback story with this for a couple reasons. First, we finally understand what DeVoe's plan was, which it feels about exactly the right time in the season to do that. But the other thing I liked is that it showed that this DeVoe's always kind of not been a great person, right? Like this has only been exacerbated by all of these new abilities and the changes to his brain that are going on, that it's not just causing him to become evil because of these powers. Like there was already something not right in DeVoe.
Yeah.
Like she mentions, his ideas are pretty radical, but it's not just that, it's the way that he was writing him that scares her. It's, you know what I mean? Like it's concerning.
Yeah. I mean, I thought this was great too. And seeing Marlise frightened by this and going away from him makes sense. But, you know, it takes something drastic to come to his side.
And the other thing I really like too is that it also shows that their unhealthy relationship too is not new, that this, he was always bad for her on some level. And it was sort of that, you know, that emotional abuse, right?
Yeah.
That he sort of almost forces her to be with, like he tries to use guilt to guilt her into being with him. Like, I'm nothing without you. And you, like I said, you can kind of see that sort of not good person that's inside him, even from the beginning. And I just thought that was extremely well written, and just, it was such a cool story to see.
Yeah, it was. Now, in the present, we see Marlise and DeVoe are collecting the equipment they need to make DeVoe's dream a reality. And as we saw last week, DeVoe is colder. He's colder than ever and is willing to kill innocent guards just to get what he wants, even though he doesn't need to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's really ramping it up, villainy, as far as being the villain that all of these other bad guys in the previous season were talking about.
All right, let's move on to Sisko and Gypsy. So we've had the storyline kind of lingering out for an episode or two about, is Sisko going to take Breacher's job? And when Gypsy and Sisko actually talk, we find out that Sisko admits he doesn't want to take the job, and Gypsy confesses that she doesn't want him to either, because she's perfectly fine with their current long-distance relationship, and that it's enough for her. And that's the last thing Sisko wants to hear, because he needs more. And we see them end up breaking up.
What a bummer of a story.
I know it was.
I did think it was, like, it made sense. I was like, okay, like, you know, they wrote it in a way that was like, yeah, this, I get why both sides are doing this, but it was such a bummer. I was like, ah. This isn't what I wanted to see.
Right. And like I said a few episodes ago, I was expecting Sisko to take the job and be gone for the summer break, you know, being Breacher.
Yeah.
And
I
that
agree.
they'd come back and, you know, having a great time and stuff, but he'd be needed back on Team Flash for some reason. That is definitely not what happened.
No, definitely not.
So I'm wondering, is Gypsy done for good then? Are we moving on then, or?
I don't know. I'm not sure. My guess is yes, she's done, but I don't know. I feel like it's the same with a lot of these actors and actresses, is sort of whether they're available and they have the desire to come back. But it could go either way. We could never see her again, like with Barry's girlfriend in season two.
Yeah.
That was so unsatisfying. But or she could come back and sort of just be a character that pops up from time to time. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? And I've always wanted to see Golden Glider come back too, because Sisko and her kind of had a fun sort of relationship thing going on, but they've never done anything with that again either.
Yeah. That one makes a little more sense, at least from a story perspective, because the Rogues just aren't a thing. And Snart is dead, so like she would have no real reason to be in Central City.
Yeah, that's true. The other relationship that we see come to an end is we see that Marlise finally breaks away from DeVoe. And I think this has been a long time coming. I mean, they started showing that a few episodes back that this was starting to happen.
Yeah, it was very satisfying seeing her get away from DeVoe. And also, it's even more satisfying after you get the backstory, because really, this is something that she needed to get away from him for years before even this started happening.
Right. And we know he's been drugging her, too. So I don't know if she's gone for good. I wonder if he's going to go back after her. Of course, he may be too wrapped up in his plans, too.
I'm very curious to see how much he pursues her, because the old DeVoe definitely would have, you know, and tried to go that same sort of emotionally abusive route of like, I need you, I can't live without you sort of thing. But this one, like you said, might be too absorbed in what he's doing to care. And he may not need her anymore. Like, this current DeVoe was keeping her around in part because she was the only thing that could keep him alive. He doesn't need that now that he's in Ralph's body, so I'm wondering if he doesn't even need her now.
Yeah, and that could very well be. So that leaves the question, is Marlise going to stay on the sidelines, or is she going to end up joining Team Flash for some reason?
Maybe neither. It could be her doing her own thing to counteract him.
That could be.
I don't know.
I don't know what their plan is, too.
She's definitely not going to be on the sideline, though. Like, she will definitely factor in somehow. I am positive about that.
So it's really interesting because they're keeping the mystery there. I don't know what their plans are.
I wouldn't be surprised if she gets the ultimate defeat over him. I kind of feel like she might be the one that delivers the final blow.
Yeah, I could see that happening too. All right, well, let's talk about Harry, because his intelligence is slowly disappearing. And basically the team tasks him to distract Cecile while he plans her baby shower. But we get to see a cool thing where Cecile's able to use her powers to help Harry complete his thoughts before they disappear. And working together, they figure out DeVoe's plans on using dark matter to reboot everyone's brain. I thought this was cool.
That was super cool. I thought it was especially because we haven't seen her use her powers in, like, what, 6 or 7 episodes at least?
Yeah, something like that. You know, not nothing like this anyways.
So that was, I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. So I thought that was a good use. And after seeing it, I'm wondering, I wonder if they've been planning that the whole time.
I wondered that too, but I'm not convinced that they have. But who knows? Maybe they did.
If so, kudos to them.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they did, but if they did, well done.
All right, let's get to the thing I've been really wanting to talk to you about. You know what it is.
Well, nothing else of importance happened. What are you talking about?
So the mystery girl shows up at Cecile's baby shower with a present, but speeds away as Iris comes to the door. So we learn that the mystery girl has super speed, which was really no surprise to me because I suspected this all along. But did you notice her lightning was both yellow and purple?
I think she's Dawn. I'm almost positive she's Dawn.
That's what I'm thinking too. So that was the one thing I wanted to ask you. Do you think this is Dawn Allen, or do you think this is one of the show's fake outs?
I'm going to say it's Dawn. I think they've had too many clues at this point that it makes by far the most sense. It's not just the lightning, although of course that her being a speedster with that lightning, but they've heavily suggested to me that she is their daughter, because she shows up at their wedding and then she shows up a sense to see her grandparents, and then she's got the same. Remember, Iris's lightning when she was the Flash was purple.
Yep, I remembered. That's why I mentioned it.
Yeah. So. I feel pretty confident that she's Dawn. I mean, of course we could be wrong. These shows are famous for faking specifically comic book fans out by making them think it's a character that they know.
Prometheus.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or Martian Manhunter.
Oh, yep. Martian Manhunter. That's another good example.
Which ended up being way better than when they actually introduced Cyborg Superman. But yeah, so I don't know. I think it's Dawn.
That's what I'm thinking too. After seeing that, and I'm excited to see where they're going with this story. My gut tells me they've been teasing her this season to be a main character next season.
I hope so.
And do you think this is the person that Jay Garrick was talking about training?
Maybe. That wouldn't really make sense though, because he's training a Flash to take over on his Earth.
I know.
So why would he be training a future version of Barry's daughter to be the Flash on his Earth in his time?
I don't know, dude. I'm just throwing it out there.
No, I know. I'm just talking through. I'm not trying to. I'm just talking through it myself.
All right. I don't know. I don't know why she's there, but
I'm still not entirely sure that she. Dawn Allen in the comics has been antagonistic from time to time, so I'd be very curious to see if she's actually a good guy or not.
Now, that you bring up a good point, because we see her, I remember a few episodes back, didn't we see her being a little evil-looking kind of thing?
Yeah, it wasn't, that was the weird thing, because she didn't do anything explicitly bad at all. She's not done anything like that this entire time, but it was the way that she sort of did that. It was like, are you bad? Are you a bad guy? I don't know. I'm very curious to see what they're doing with her character.
I am too. And they've got the whole internet wondering what's up with her.
And I hope it's a next season payoff, because that is the best way to get people talking about next season, is to sort of have that tease going. Not just like in the last couple episodes, but like throughout the whole season.
Right. Like they have done.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing they're going to drop something big in the season finale about her that's going to have everybody wondering what's going on.
Yeah.
That's my thought, and I'm sticking to it. All right, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Arrow, Season 6, Episode 21, Docket Number 11-19-41-73. Kind of a weird title, but whatever. All right, so in this episode, Oliver goes to court. And as the trial unfolds, we watch as Diggle and Dinah and everybody takes the stand to testify that Oliver is not the Green Arrow. Wasn't it kind of gut-wrenching when Renee took the stand?
Oh, yeah.
And Diaz comes in with his daughter? I was like, whoa.
And you really got... I thought that scene was great for a couple of reasons. So first, the actor playing Renee did a great job emotionally showing like how conflicting that would be, because he does not want to rat Oliver out, but he has no choice because his daughter is in immediate danger. So that was fantastic how he acted that out. Also, the way you got that sort of subtle nod from Oliver, like, do it. Like, I understand. You have to do it. So that was great. And then the third thing is that it really helped demonstrate how deep the corruption is. He's in the courtroom openly threatening his daughter, and nobody does anything about it or even thinks anything of it.
Right. And Renee can really speak up about it because he knows everybody's corrupt. That's the thing.
Yeah.
He could have easily said, why is there a man over there with my daughter? Would anybody have reacted if he would have said anything about it?
Right. Yeah.
So, great move on Diaz's part, that's for sure. I mean,
they've really ramped up Diaz's menace very, very well in the last three or four episodes or so. And again, I have to question why they waited so long. Like, the twist, I still think the twist was fantastic, the reveal that actually he is the bad guy and not Caden James. But I still think that happened too deep into the season.
Yeah, because we could have seen a lot more stuff like this from Diaz.
He is a good villain. Like, he is a very good villain. He could have filled that. I thought one of the reasons I thought this season was floundering so much was because they were trying to Caden was not. Caden was a good, like, two or three episode villain max, and they stretched him out, like, eight episodes beyond what he was good for. And the show suffered for that because they were sort of rudderless, because you had this threat that wasn't adequate enough. At least for me, it was not adequate enough as a seasoned villain.
And while you had that going on, you had the team breakup too, which wasn't that fun to watch.
Right, exactly, which was not fun to watch, but also I felt like was there in part to take up more time in the season. And so, like, if you simply just took more episodes to, you know, have Diaz really truly be the villain, I think the season overall would have been stronger. I think you'd have had more strong episodes.
Yeah. I think sometimes part of Arrow's problem is they try to string things out the whole season when they could easily do two or three different story arcs per season of different things. You know what I mean?
I agree with you. I think I like the idea of having the first half of the season be Caden James and then the sort of twist that it's actually Diaz. And that would have been fine, but that should have been the mid-season finale twist. Should have been that. Instead of the twist being like, oh, just there's a super team, actually, of bad guys. Which was not that satisfying of a twist. It was sort of like, okay, and? It still doesn't make Caden James a good villain. I felt like was at least our takeaway from that. Can you imagine if that had been the mid-season finale instead? Was the Diaz reveal?
Yeah.
I thought that'd have been so much more satisfying. People would have been much more excited to see Arrow coming out of the break, because I think, at least for me, I saw that finale and I was like, I mean, I like Arrow, so I'm excited for it to come back, but like, I'm not on the edge of my seat because you didn't give me anything to be on the edge of my seat for.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we see Oliver take the stand. And this is kind of what you're hinting at last week. So we see Oliver take the stand, and he's interrupted by none other than Green Arrow, who comes crashing through the skylight. And when he unmasked, I was like, whoa, it's Tommy! And it had me freaked out because I have to admit, I didn't recognize Christopher Chance at the beginning of the issue that's who Diggle was rescuing.
Oh, see, I did. I was so disappointed when that, because they showed that scene, and as soon as I saw Diggle was rescuing someone, I was like, oh, I know who that is. And I will admit, that wasn't based, like, not because I could tell who the actor was sitting there, but I was like, oh, he's rescuing the Human Target, because that way the Human Target can be Tommy. And it was so disappointing that I was, like, mad at myself that I figured it out. Because, like, I knew on some level that it wasn't going to really be Tommy, but I still wanted to be surprised. But that scene, and I'm not saying this as, like, it's a brag. Like, I was mad at myself. As soon as I saw that scene of Diggle rescuing the Human Target, I was like, ah, crap, I know who that is.
Why did they show that? I think it would have been much more effective to just have Tommy show up. Now, I was surprised by it because I didn't recognize him when Diggle was rescuing him. I just thought they were showing what Diggle's been up to.
I think it was smart, because if you just randomly have it be the Human Target, that you're sort of like, what? You know what I mean? It would have been so out of the blue if you didn't have any sort of setup for Diggle being up to something. I think you could have done a little bit less, like maybe have him go into the tent, seeing a dude tied up to the chair, and leave it at that. Because part of it was, as soon as he talked, I was like, oh, I know. And I think I partly recognized his voice, because he was also on Jessica Jones. Like, I'm familiar with that actor a little bit. And so, like, if they had just simply left it as, like, Diggle going into the tent, and you can see that he's going to rescue someone, at that point, it's believable that it's Tommy. But as soon as he started talking, you could tell that he was expecting John to show up. And if it was Tommy, that absolutely wouldn't be the case. So immediately you know it's somebody else. And that's when I personally connected the dots. And I'm sure a lot of other people did too. So, like, if you just leave it at that, like, take that last step out and just have it, John walks into a tent, there's clearly some duties rescuing, then you can, like, it's still doubtful that it's Tommy, but there's a lot more reasonable doubt there. You're like, oh, maybe it is Tommy. Is Tommy alive?
Yeah, that's what I thought when I saw him in the courtroom. I was like, wait a minute, is Tommy alive? And they had me kind of freaked out for a little bit, but I thought it was a cool idea.
It was still really cool. And I thought it was so funny too. And when Black Canary was basically like, "We're just going to immediately undo this because we're just going to tell them what you did," and it was like, "Oh yeah," like it was sort of. I liked that moment a lot because it was so logical. Like the villains would know that's what they did, and they would just tell them like, "Oh yeah, that wasn't really Tommy Merlin. They've been known to use this other dude to pretend to be people." And again, that's just one of the things I really enjoyed about Diaz is that he's sort of known some of Oliver's plays ahead of time.
Yeah. And then we see when Laurel actually takes the stand, she doesn't do what she's supposed to do, which pisses Diaz off. She testifies that Tommy Merlin is the Green Arrow, knowing full well that she's basically, you know, committing suicide by Diaz.
Right.
I really like that turn. Like that being the moment where Laurel takes her stance.
I agree. I like what they're doing with her character. And I'm excited to see that. And I still, on some level, I'm expecting her to have some sort of happy ending with her and Quentin.
Yeah. I see the writing on the wall for that. She's going to be flipping over to Team Arrow soon. Either that or not being involved. You know what I mean? She may just go into hiding too. Who knows? We still get to the end of the episode where the jury finds Oliver guilty. I was surprised that the jury came back with a guilty verdict. When they came back with that verdict, I was like, wait a minute. There's too much reasonable doubt.
But that's the point.
And I was wondering
that's how deep the corruption goes.
I was wondering if the jury had been paid off.
Oh, they absolutely had. I mean, they even mentioned it in the episode. They're like, we're pretty sure that he's got his hands in the pockets of the jury as well.
And then when I was shocked when the judge said that he was overturning it. And I was like, what? And then we find out it was Chance. I was like, oh, man, that was such a sweet move.
That was a really nice twist. I liked that a lot because I thought that for the second that the judge was having his own Laurel moment where he was like, you know what? No, I'm going to stand up for the law.
The thing is, because he was Diaz's pocket, there was no way that judge was going to do that. So that was a great surprise.
Yeah.
And then
I will say, though, when he dies at the end, it's hard to not feel like Oliver's team essentially had this judge killed. And like, yes, the judge is corrupt, but like so much that he deserves to die. I felt a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, that did feel uncomfortable. I was just getting ready to bring up about the judge dying. I mean, they basically sealed his fate.
Because that's one of those things, like, you have to, like, yes, he definitely deserved some comeuppance, of course, because for his corruption, but, like, death? That seems a little strict. Of course, I mean, yes, they didn't do it, but you have to know that that's what's going to happen to him.
Yeah, and that's the judge's karma.
Yeah. The one takeaway I had from this was that if Oliver is going to reveal that he's the Green Arrow at the end of this season, which we don't know if he's going to do that or not, but if he does, he just continues to bury himself. Like, there's just no way he's going to look good at this point.
I know.
You know what I mean? Because, like, they had to really, really bend over backwards to get him out of the conviction this time. And so if for him to then come out and be like, actually, I have been the Green Arrow this entire time, like, there's no way you look good from that. You'd be like, man, you could have admitted this multiple times. Like, there's no good excuse.
I don't know why he would want to. Because it's going to paint a big target on him and Felicity and his son.
I felt like this I'm not going to lie, I was expecting him to admit it at a certain point. After the Tommy ploy didn't work, I thought he was going to come out and admit it.
I was wondering that too, because I had the same thought.
Because the other lawyer makes a good point that he's basically how many people are being hurt by his lies, you know, so that he can continue on this on his crusade sort of thing. I thought she raised a lot of really good moral points. It was sort of like, oh, dude, like, you really should probably maybe consider stop lying.
So this ended up being a great episode. I was wondering how it was going to go.
Yeah. I like I said, this last, like, fourth of the season or so has been pretty good, and it makes me wonder, like, why did we have to wait so long for this?
I don't know. I feel like there were some hiccups that we could have avoided.
Yeah.
So, and we know showrunners are leaving, so it'll be interesting to see next season how the season goes. Hopefully we get a more cohesive season.
Yeah, I am very excited to see what the new showrunners do next year, because there's been some good stuff, there's been some bad stuff with the showrunners. I'm excited to see what new people can do, what fresh eyes can do.
Right, me too. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. What's your shout out, Cletus?
Drew and I both didn't go to Free Comic Book Day like we mentioned. And DC, too, kind of flew under the radar this year, which is a little surprising. But in case you're curious and you're wanting to find what DC's book was, it was a DC Superhero Girls. It was basically like a small selection from A Date with Disaster. So that is a full graphic novel, but their free issue was a selection from that.
That was it?
That was it. That's what I'm saying. DC didn't really put a whole lot out. I was surprised.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, Marvel didn't really put a whole lot out either. Both of the major companies kind of, I don't know, let this one go to the wayside, I thought, a little bit. To be fair, Marvel especially is undergoing a lot of big changes. And maybe DC was just too busy with other stuff. I don't know.
That could be. I'm surprised they didn't put DC Nation number zero out as a
free issue. I think DC Nation zero should definitely have been a free issue. I think for sure should have been a free issue.
I mean, That would have been perfect for a free issue, I thought. I was surprised they didn't.
It reads like a Free Comic Book Day issue.
Yeah, it does. Like,
yeah.
So who knows? Maybe they had budget concerns too. But don't most of the comic book shops end up paying for those free issues anyways?
I think so. I don't really know. I don't know enough to know for sure.
All right. I don't know for sure either. All right. And for my shout out, I am going to shout out an author friend of mine, Jerry Gordon, has put out a book called Breaking the World. It's published by the Apex Book Company, and it's basically a story about David Koresh and Waco. So I just got this from him this weekend, signed copy. So I'm excited about checking it out. So I'm sure you can find it on Amazon, but that's what my shout out is. All right, well, if you want to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, next week, Cletus, we're going to be talking Detective Comics number 980, Justice League No Justice number 1, we got The Flash number 46 and Batman White Knight number 8. So we got some cool stuff coming out next week.
That's the final issue of White Knight, correct?
Yes, it is.
Oof.
So
that's exciting.
Yes, that is exciting. Plus, we have the CW shows, and I think we only have 2 episodes of Arrow left and 3 of Flash. So yeah. we're getting down to the nitty-gritty.
Yeah. I'm getting excited. Flash and Arrow both have been a little bit up and down. Flash has been mostly good, but both of them are building to really strong conclusions.
Yeah, and I'm excited about them. All right, well, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Cletus, move your head.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.